Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I'm your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me, as ever, is Oriol Puigdemont. And for the first time in over a year, Yuri, you're back home.
I'm back home, and I went to Sachsenring, and yeah, we had an incredible and a really emotional race on Sunday.
Yeah, well, it's good to see that MotoGP kept all its drama for when you came back to the paddock, because it turned out to be quite an interesting weekend.
Yeah.
Of course, the main story being the return of the king, Marc Marquez, as a Grand Prix winner again, after a year and a half of absolute hell for the Spanish rider, I think is the only way to describe it. Because I mean, because we don't really know what Marc went through. He's spoken a little bit about it, but he hasn't spoken deeply about what he went through over the past year. I think it's a lot worse than what anyone imagined. So this result was a lot bigger than, and I meant a lot more to him than I think a lot of people realized.
Yeah, I think we could have an idea about what was he going through. But I think the dark moments were only him. I mean, he was alone by himself. And I think that's what all that tears, speak about, you know. So I would say that, yeah, it was a really, really, really emotional. And as he said, it was probably the most important victory of his career, because what it meant, and what it means to him, to Honda, because it proves a lot of things. And now he knows that he is capable of winning again. So that's the fact. And I think that's the most important thing of all this process.
Yeah, for sure. And the way he went about the win as well was typical Marc Marquez fashion, because there was a bit of rain, and it was at that point where he just pulled the pin, you know, from I think lap 7 to lap 8. You know, he was 0.2 ahead of Espargaró, and then he was 1.2 seconds ahead of Espargaró. It was a few laps where he just hammered home his advantage in those tricky conditions, and then managed the gap to Miguel behind. Miguel put a lot of pressure on Marc, and Marc in the final stages, you could see the tire was dropping, but he absorbed the pressure, and he won like Marc Marquez, which, I mean, it sounds a bit silly, but you know what I mean?
It was the lap number 9. The lap number 9 when the raindrops start to fall, and the marshals show the white flag, when he made a difference, and he kept his pace while the others reduced it by between 0.7 and a second. So, and then from then on, he managed the gap until the end. Miguel tried to put him under pressure, but in the end, Marc was really good and on managing this second gap. And again, I would say that other than this performance in those laps and those tricky conditions, I think we've had a really good example of the old Marc at the beginning of the race. There's a start and the first approach, and the approach to the first corner. We've seen this aggressivity, this power, this, you know, bravery than we've seen him on the past. And I think that's really good news.
For sure. We knew Sachsenring would suit Marquez, all left corners. So it suits him any other time in a normal time. You know, he's never been beaten there since 2010 in any class. And it's the layout he likes, you know, his flat track background, his dirt track background, sort of, you know, he just enjoys left corners. But this year it was more significant because his right side of the body is and his right shoulder is what's given him the most problems. So we knew that coming to Sachsenring, this would be a circuit where he wouldn't be as hamstrung by this. He said himself, but he was a little bit surprised that he actually struggled a bit more physically on the bike than what he thought. And he wasn't anticipating a victory on the Sunday, which now looks a bit like sandbagging. But I genuinely don't think he was fully expecting the race to go the way it did.
I spoke with Santi Hernandez straight after the race, and he told me, listen, my heart was telling me it is possible, but my head, my brain was telling me maybe podium would be amazing, so it would be the maximum. And in the end, he put the difference, and he made the difference again. So I don't think even the team was expecting to fight for the win, because we've seen Mark struggling quite a lot since he came back in Portugal, and I think that despite we're gonna have we're not gonna have this version of Mark in Assen next weekend, I think this victory, it will be a huge boost for him. And maybe we can have, you know, a better version of the last races from him.
Yeah, for sure. Honda have spoken about this as well. We know they've struggled a lot with this 2021 bike. Rear grip's been the main issue, which has affected both acceleration and braking as well. And they know that this isn't going to be the start of anything big, but like you said at the start there, it's kind of opened their eyes a little bit to the potential of the bike. Paul Espargaro said this as well. He knows now that what this bike is capable of, so he has to match that. So it just seems like it's come at the right point for Honda. They know it's still a long road ahead, but it seems they can see a way out of it.
Well, I think that the best way of looking at it, at this situation, is now there is no doubt that Honda has a problem. Before this point, there was some, well, yes, it's Mark winning, but it's Mark winning with this bike, so it's the combination. Now, nobody speaks about that, because in Sachsenring, again, Mark made the difference. So now everybody in Honda are convinced that they have a big problem with the bike, and that needs to be fixed. So, and again, I don't agree 100% with Paul, because if he says, well, now it's good that we had this victory from Mark, because now we all know what this bike is capable of doing. Well, I would add, in Mark's hands.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Which is a big compliment.
Yeah. Paul talked about this. He said, now I need to copy Mark's bike and Mark's settings. And I thought that was a strange comment, because Mark rides the bike in such a unique way and a different way to Paul.
And I guess a bit later we will speak about Vinales and the setup and using...
Yeah. I was actually just going to say that we'll get onto Vinales properly in a second, but he was angry. He said, you know, he can't use Fabio's settings because he rides the bike differently from Fabio. So it's hard to see how Paul's going to all of a sudden start being really strong on the bike by using Mark's bike. I mean, if it was simply about using Mark's bike, then Cal Crutchlow, Danny Pedrosa, Jorge Lorenzo would all be multiple world champions by now. So,
yeah, I think that is very hard. I mean, in the end, at the end of the day, that's the hardest part of being Mark's teammate. And I think Paul, when he decided to leave KTM and sign for Honda, he was aware about that. But now he's experimenting it really hard.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be interesting to see how that kind of goes as the season goes on. We mentioned Vinales there, and I think we have to dedicate a bit of this podcast to what was said at the weekend, because it was an awful weekend for Maverick. It was an awful weekend for all Yamaha riders apart from Fabio Quartararo, which raises an interesting sort of comparison between Marc Marquez, but we'll get onto that in a minute. Maverick 21st in qualifying. He was last in the race. He was 19th, but he was last. His worst ever MotoGP weekend, and he's fuming with Yamaha. I got the first question in the press debrief in English on Sunday, and I said, what happened? He said, I don't know. And that was it. In Spanish, he said, look, all I am is a data collector. I'm trying this and all I'm doing is testing, and it's becoming disrespectful, which is some serious words. And it seems to me that this relationship between Yamaha and Vinales is kind of at a point where they can't fix it anymore. Like, there's just no way back.
Yeah, as you say, it's a really difficult situation. I think this relationship is getting into a point which, in my opinion, will be very difficult to address. But again, I think we've spoken a lot about this. I think that after 17, 18, 19, 20, 20, almost 5 years, if the same story happens again and again, and you have teammates being faster than you, maybe the problem is not from Yamaha. I don't want, I mean, you know, it's just common sense. I mean, what's the point? Okay, in the end, what he's trying to say. So when you have Fabio being faster, being consistent, being happy with the bike, being happy means that he's fighting for the podium, or in the worst days, he's fighting for top five.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Maverick, yesterday, as you say, started 21st, and he was last most of the race. So,
and it's worth pointing out he was deliberately last. He said he backed off from trying to overtake anyone, which is. He said it was to understand the bike and clear air, but that to me suggests he was sort of sending a message to Yamaha to say, kind of, look, this bike doesn't work in a pack. But it's just strange. It's a strange way to go about it.
I don't think at this point and in the middle of the battle he was sending any message. It's just that he cannot ride this bike being fast. Mm. So, but again, what does it mean? He had problems with Ramon Forcada. Okay, he changed Ramon Forcada. He had problems with Esteban Garcia. Okay, they changed Esteban Garcia. And now he has problems with Galbusera. So what are they going to do? So maybe it's time to look to yourself and say, okay, what's going on here?
You mentioned happiness, and that seems to be a key thing, because if you look at the way Maverick and Fabio have worked over the past 2 years, Maverick's changed crew chief twice. You know, he's tried lots of different things that haven't worked, lots of different methods in a practice session that haven't worked. Fabio, every time he's hit a problem, he's looked at himself. After last year, he went to work with a sports psychologist. After his first race in Qatar in 2019, when he had a difficult time and he struggled with that, he went to speak to a psychologist. It seems that Fabio is more willing to accept that if there's a problem, then it's generally him, whereas Maverick kind of doesn't see that, which...
That's a good way to look at it.
And you look at the contrast, and you look at how Fabio was... Fabio really should have probably 5 wins this season if it wasn't for what happened in Jerez and what happened in Barcelona. He's quick every single weekend and every single track, and even when he's not quick, like in Germany, he's still on the podium.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we said at the beginning of the year. And listen, in the end, Yamaha has the same resources for both riders. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean? I mean, I don't see, to be honest, it's not that I'm part of their, let's say, Forcada's fan club.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would say that I don't see many technical directors or crew chiefs with more experience than him.
Yeah. Well, a 3-time world champion with Lorenzo, runner-up last year with Morbidelli.
Yeah. And he's been working with a lot of top riders. So I wouldn't say that this is a technical problem or, you know. So now Galbusera has been working with Rossi. He fought for the title in 2015 until the last race, blah, blah, blah. So I don't see. I mean, the resources from Yamaha are the same for both riders, and they are doing their best. The bike is good because we can see that Fabio is fighting for the victory most of the races, and when he's not, he's fighting for the podium. And okay, I would say, listen, if he can fight for top seven, top eight, boof, maybe, okay. But being last, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. We know this 2021 bike is better. All the riders have talked about it.
And just one more thing. I mean, it's just our guessing followed by what he says, followed by his words. But if he wants to say something, okay, let's go ahead and say it clearly.
Until yesterday, he really hasn't been saying anything. You ask him about what's going on, he said, "Boah, I don't know. I was happy with the bike, but
I'm not a psychologist and I don't pretend to be, but in the end, when I really the only way of in my case of knowing a rider is by the experience of being in front of him time after time, and you know, with Maverick, I'm always surprised because about all of those ups and downs. I mean, in terms of, you know, his emotions. Mm. I mean, no, I'm very happy. I'm very happy with the bike. Well, tomorrow I will try my best because, you know, we are working well. And yeah, and he starts, I don't know, 12th,
yeah,
15th. Yeah. So what's the point? And then when you think that he has to be happy, he's not happy. And, you know, it's just very, very, I mean, in my opinion, it's ups and downs. And I mean, it's really, really difficult to predict.
Yeah. Yeah. That is because we sat at the start of the season after Qatar, after Maverick won, and we thought, whoa, you know, we've never seen Maverick ride like that before. And we thought this was the start. And it hasn't worked out. He's not sort of working with this. But I think if you look over the sort of past years since he joined Yamaha, apart from those first sort of five races, he doesn't suit the bike. His riding style doesn't suit the Yamaha. He's too aggressive for the Yamaha. People said he was like Lorenzo, but he's nothing like Lorenzo. Fabio's a bit more like
I don't see, to be honest, Luis, I don't see how this can be a problem of riding style or technical problem. I think it's just a problem of approach. I wouldn't say mental problem because it sounds too hard, but
yeah,
a problem of mentality. I mean, approach.
Yeah.
Approach. So I don't see, I mean, with riding a style problem, you can be between, okay, winning races and finishing top eight, considering the level of the riders that we have and that is MotoGP, but not from being in the podium like Fabio and being 17th, 18th. So no way. So it has to be more, you know, a human problem or you know, personal thing.
Yeah. Well, that's fair enough. But it's interesting because we see the results from Fabio, but again, it's almost like Mark over the past few years in Honda. It's quite hard to analyze kind of where the bike is because, you know, you've got Fabio doing his business, but then you've got Valentino saying more or less the same things that Maverick says about the bike. We can't really compare anything to Franco because he's on a two-year-old bike that's just slow. But if, you know, if you look over the past, you look last year, Fabio was the better of all the Yamaha riders, apart from Franco, but again, different bike. You look at the year before, you know, Fabio again was better than all the other Yamaha riders, more or less.
Yeah, but for example, last year we've had this problem with the bike. This year, we have Fabio showing that the bike works. And not only Fabio, I mean, we've seen a lot of inputs telling us that their bike really performs.
Yeah, yeah. We know that it's strange. It makes the whole thing just more strange and it's frustrating. And I feel like a broken record because we know Maverick's a quick rider. We know he can do it. And it's just frustrating that it doesn't happen. And it's kind of hard to see what Yamaha can do anymore apart from get rid of him. With all due respect, Fabio shows that it's a race-winning package.
Well, I think that this is not on their mind at the moment because they have Fabio winning, because they have, I mean, they are in the right position with one of the riders. If Fabio gets the title, I think all can be managed in a, let's say, patient situation, you know, approach. But let's see, because I don't see at the moment Yamaha thinking on renewing the contract with Maverick after 2022.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, it's hard to understand. I don't know. Maverick's just, he's such a conundrum as a rider. It's just, it's bizarre. What else should we talk about? Let's talk about the Ducatis, because it was, we came to Sachsenring expecting things not to kind of go so well for them, but fifth, sixth, eighth, they were in that top group for most of the race. It sort of appears that this bike sort of works everywhere now, more or less.
Yeah, I think they have a really good package. Many people say that the current Ducati is the best bike or the most balanced bike of the grid. They just need to be a bit more aggressive and to be more there, especially on Saturdays. I mean, not Zarco, but Zarco is playing the game. I think he's playing the right cards. But I mean, the factory riders need to be a bit more sharp, let's say, a bit more aggressive. And because I think, I was, to be honest, when the start, when the drops of rain start to fall Sunday, I thought, whoa, Jack is coming. But it didn't. I mean, he didn't. And I think that they need to make the most of these kind of opportunities, because maybe they will miss those points at the end of the year.
That's a fair comment, especially for Bagnaia. I mean, you know, he had really, really good pace at the end of that race, but he took too long to get going. And you can't really be doing that as a factory Ducati rider. But it does look, at least going forward, that we're coming to some good circuits for the Ducati now, Austria, Silverstone. So when they get to those strong circuits, it looks like they can at least back up that form with decent results at their weaker circuits. So there's no more excuses now for Ducati. They have to, they can win these championships, so they have to now.
Yeah,
to
they now can. They can, but they need to make a step. They need to make a step forward. And I think we are getting into this point where we don't have last championship anymore. I mean, the nature of the championship is not the one that you can win by being there on the shadow and, you know, just making the most of your opportunities. I think you need to do a step ahead. I think we've spoken about that in the past editions of the podcast, but I think now it's more clear than ever that the champion will need to win races. Not, I mean, being around there, being around the podium places won't be enough, in my opinion.
No, I agree with you. And Fabio said the same thing on Sunday. He actually referenced how Mark rode the Thailand race in 2019 when all he needed to do was finish ahead of Dovi, but he still went and fought for the win. So I do agree with you. One team that definitely needs to step up and be up there is Suzuki, and it's, you know, 9th and 11th. Okay, yeah, Alex Rins was injured, but that 11th came after a run of many crashes. Mir, it's just, I mean, the Suzuki was quick at Sachsenring in 2019, so there's no real excuse for the Suzuki not to be quick again this weekend, and they just weren't. I mean, Mir was 16th on the grid. Not going to win a championship starting 16th, 17th on the grid. You know, it's,
I think they have a huge problem. They need somebody to take the role of boss and take decisions in the end. That's what the bosses need to do, and they need to choose somebody from the team, or they need to hire somebody from outside the team. But they need drive at the moment. They don't have drive, and you can feel, and I can assure that the atmosphere inside the team is not the best at the moment, which is understandable, but they need to fix the situation. They need to put some order and they need to do it fast, not only for this year, but for the future.
Yeah, well, yeah, they didn't replace Brivio because they wanted to keep the team consistent, which was a fair enough reason at the start of the year, but it has sort of proven to be that...
They are taking a lot of risks. They are taking the risk of losing Joan Mir or Alex Rins. Mm. I mean, if come up any, you know, interesting offer for any of them. So they need to react.
Sahara's become sort of the de facto kind of team leader of this management structure, but he's kind of proven to be not forceful enough. I think you mentioned this earlier in the year with the Qatar incident between Mir and Miller. It never really got taken any further because Sahara-san wasn't as confident in that area. And it seems, you know, Mir talked about this at the weekend. He said, we're giving away free time because we don't have the rear haul shot device. You know, we can't, they've been asking the engineers, but they've not had the reaction. Where you kind of think in the Brivio days, Brivio would have communicated that better and there might have been a bit more sort of movement. It seems they're missing that kind of link between Italy and Japan.
Well, in the end, I think we have in all the other Japanese manufacturers, we have a European link between the team and the factory in Japan. We have Alberto Puch in Honda. We have Lynn Jarvis in Yamaha. We have nobody in Suzuki.
And the crucial thing about those two as well is that they're strong leaders. Alberto speaks his mind. Lynn is a very good communicator.
So, well, they're not only communicator. I mean, they are good in taking decisions. They are not, you know, they are brave enough to take the decisions and to get responsibility for those decisions. So I think there's a reason why there's this European link. And Suzuki, I think at some point they will have to put somebody there because it's proven that Sahara is not the right one because he doesn't have the character, which is, yeah, really, I mean, understandable, but at the same time, it's not the best for the team.
Yeah, I agree. I just want to touch on a couple of news points that we're expecting over this weekend and last week, of course, the kind of main ones being Ducati and VR46. We expect the announcement's going to happen. We know Ducati and Gresini is a thing. Do you know any more? Do you know what bike specs the VR46 team will have? We know Gresini will have 2021 bikes, I think.
Yes. Yes, because I spoke with Ducati and both Gresini riders will have 2021 bikes, Bastianini and Di Gianantonio. And in the case of VR46, Luca Marini will have the 2022 bike and his teammate, which I guess will be Marco Bezzecchi, will have 2021 bike. It's just because Ducati, that's what they told me, Ducati cannot produce that much amount of bikes. So they have to move around the bikes from last year and yeah, there will be the five, if I'm not wrong, five 2022 bikes, both official, both Pramac and Marini, and all the others will be 2021.
It's a little bit interesting that Marini's been favoured for the factory bike over Bastianini. I would kind of say Bastianini would maybe deserve that, but it's sort of, I guess that shows that VR46 and Ducati, that's maybe part of the deal of to keep Rossi's side of things happy.
Well, but the thing is that they are happy with Marini. I think Marini started the year better than expected, and yeah, I would say it's a good first season for him. Of course, I mean, in compared with Bastianini, if you compare him with, for example, Jorge Martin, no way. But yeah.
And Raul Fernandez, he's been a kind of main talking point over the weekend. You wrote something that by the time this podcast goes out, I imagine will be on the website, so we're fine to talk about it. But SRT are interested in Fernandez, but they don't want to get into a kind of war with KTM. Pit Beirer told us at the weekend that Raul has said he wants to stay in Moto2 another year. Doesn't seem like he wants to go to Tech 3. What's your sort of take on that whole situation?
Well, I think it's a difficult situation because Raul Fernandez, well, I'm not sure. I'm not the one denying what Pete Beirer says that Raul told him. But as far as I know, Raul would sign for Petronas tomorrow. But the problem is that the money he had to put on table for being free from KTM. That's the main, that's the main problem. So I think there's a chess game going on, and then we will see how it finishes. I know that Raul Fernandez believes that for his riding style, for the sporting, let's say, project, he would sign tomorrow for SRT. But at the same time, he is completely locked by KTM. So at the moment, I would say, and I can be wrong, but I would say that the two most likely scenarios are either he signs for SRT, which means that he found the way to get unlocked from KTM, or he stays in Moto2. Because if he jumps into MotoGP with Tektra, with Tech 3, I assume he will have to sign an extension. So I think what he's looking at is, okay, if I cannot sign for Petronas for next year, I will try to be a free agent for 2023 when the market and there will be more bikes available. You know, the market will be more open and there will be more options available. So that's how the situation is. Of course, KTM plays its cards. But at the same time, I would add that I have the feeling that KTM would be good if they reconsider their, let's say, riders' politics. Riders approach, because they've had a lot of examples like Jorge Martin, like Paul Espargaró, and now with Remy Gardner as well. I mean, they forced him to sign the Tech 3 deal for next year. So when this happens time after time after time, maybe it's a good moment to reconsider something or to adjust some part of your politic approach.
So just quickly, if Fernandez doesn't come to MotoGP, who do you expect would be the kind of likely candidates for SRT and Tech 3? Because Tech 3 is interesting because Beirer said they both like Lecuona and Petrucci still. Petrucci still wants to stay there. Lecuona says he doesn't want to go back to Moto2. And there's been linked talks of Toprak, Rasgato, I'll go maybe going to SRT if there's a vacancy, but I kind of don't really see happening.
I spoke with Stigefell over the weekend and he told me that Xavi Vierge is on the list, then they have different riders. But I think that I would say that, they will try to look at their squad to Moto2 riders if they cannot get Fernandez. That's what I would expect, because I mean, don't forget that would be the second bike, would be a 1 year old bike, and they don't have big budget, because otherwise they would, I mean, they would be able to give Fernandez a bigger salary, so he would be able to pay the clause for being free. At the moment, I think they have much lower salary or budget for the second bike. And don't forget that will be a year old bike. So I don't think is the best move for depending which kind of rider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess maybe an interesting thing would maybe be for that seat. Dorna might get involved and maybe want Jake Dixon on it just to have a British rider for next year, even if it's only for a season.
If it's only for a season, if they are forced to, of course, you never say never. But at the moment, this is very unlikely.
Yeah.
As far as I know.
Yeah, for sure. Yuri, thank you very much. We'll wrap it up there. I know it's been a long weekend for you, so I think you deserve a day off. If you like what you heard, you can go and listen to all of our other podcasts on all your podcast places. And you can catch up with everything from the German Grand Prix weekend and from the Assen weekend coming up on Autosport and motorsport.com. Until next time, it's a very warm goodbye and keep looking after yourself.